Blog Talk Radio.
This is Master Griot Radio, channel 13 on your NBBTA Internet Radio dial. I'm Jacqueline Taylor Adams, and I am your host for this moment in time. It's time for purpose-driven words, shaping thoughts, building minds, true wealth, communities, and legacies.
If my words had wings, they'd fly to you each day.
You got the power. You got the strength. And you ain't alone. We got each other. We gonna win. We got, I know your weakness. I know your shame. I know your highs. I know your lows. I know your pain. I know what you're thinking.
Jim Newsom's with Urban Tech Talk on the radio. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Oh, I'm feeling fine tonight. How are you doing, Jackie?
I'm feeling great. And we have a great show coming up today, correct?
Oh, I am really looking forward to talking with Brother Kwasi. You know, he has so much insight into the whole gamification industry, not to mention the development of social media as in its entirety. He's worked on both sides of the fences, and I know the brother has some great insight to share with us.
Okay, all righty. Well, what we're going to do right now, he has asked us to give him a call, so we're going to give him a call right now, all right? Okay. I can go back and forth. Oh, I wrote it down. Okay, we are calling Brother Kwasi Asari. And while I'm calling him, give everybody a little background on him, Jim.
Kwasi has worked for most of the major hip-hop labels, from Sony Records to Bad Boy as a social media director or strategist. He has his own company now called Fighter, which develops game and mobile applications for a brand. I'm not sure who some of his clients
Hello.
Are.
Hello. Hi, Kwasi.
Hey, guys. What's up?
Hello. How are
you,
sir?
How you doing, my brother?
I'm great, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing fine. We've got you live on the air, and let me start by telling you how much I appreciate you taking time out of your day to share some of your knowledge and experience with our listeners. I happened to meet Brother Kwasi at Digital Hollywood, which is a major industry event, and I'm sure that Kwasi will confirm that at these type of events, we need to have more of us participating, because it's an opportunity to meet one-on-one with movers and shakers such as Kwasi and other people of color in the industry. Am I correct, my brother?
Yeah, you know, it's a really dynamic platform that Victor Harwood developed. You know, I think maybe more than 15 years ago, Digital Hollywood first got started. And it's really been the definitive conference, kind of bringing together stakeholders in media and technology. I mean, you've had people like Puff and Quincy Jones and folks like that participating in past Digital Hollywoods. And with, you know, the new urban focus that Digital Hollywood has created, it's definitely kind of brought more people of color to the table as attendees and certainly as people participating in this conversation about the future of digital media.
Speaking of the future of digital media, I was doing a little short intro or bio on you before you picked up the phone. But if you can kind of tell our listeners some of your background, some of the companies that you work with, and skill sets that you have.
Before we get to there, Kwazi, even before we get to there, we like to hear at Mantic Real Radio, you know, the world always wants to know, who is Kwazi Asadi? So you could tell us just a little bit about the man and then tell us about your claim to fame.
Okay. Well, you can find out all about it in my new biography that's coming out. No, just kidding. I grew up just outside of Philadelphia. You know, my parents are from Ghana, and so I was, considered first-generation American. I ended up going to the University of Pennsylvania and studying international politics. And had the pleasure of studying with just amazing professors, including former governor of Pennsylvania, Ed Rendell, who eventually became one of my mentors. After college, like a lot of folks from University of Pennsylvania, I ended up on Wall Street. I spent 2 years doing sales and trading at Salomon Smith Barney in their institutional sales and trading department, first in New York and then in San Francisco. But, you know, I didn't think that Wall Street really, the way that I was kind of positioned there, was really allowing me to be as creative as I wanted to be professionally. And so I moved to Los Angeles. Really didn't have a lot of relationships or a real plan, but my thought was, I'll move to L.A. I'll try to get involved in the entertainment industry. You know, I'm a smart guy. Like, what's the worst thing that could happen, right? So I just kind of dove in. You know, I actually started writing a lot of music articles. And this was at the time when MySpace just started. I think I was number 70,000. At the time, they had number profiles for MySpace for the first, like, 100,000 people or something. I was just at a time when things were changing really rapidly. Digital was starting to really kind of make its impact for the first time. I was kind of going into the industry at that time, so I thought, what better way to kind of engage media than by taking this digital thing and really kind of understanding that and owning it. So I made that my mission. My first startup in 03, our clients were folks like Funkadelic and Blackalicious. Maybe you know artists like AC Alone and Medusa. But we did very early digital strategy for these folks, and that kind of led to actually producing massive concerts. And so I spent a lot of time producing concerts in Los Angeles and in that area, a lot of time for brands like Music for America or Musicians Institute that would hire us to essentially do marketing as well as event production. Again, the internet being kind of the driver for all this. And so that kind of gave us an advantage over a lot of the other promoters in LA. With that kind of mix, doing publicity, doing concerts, and then starting to do this digital strategy stuff, kind of started to make a little bit of a name for myself in LA. One day Columbia Records called, and they were starting a new division at Sony called Sony Urban, Sony being the parent company for Columbia Records. And they asked me if I wanted to join. And so I moved back to New York City, ended up working on campaigns for Beyonce and the Fugees and 36 Mafia and John Legend, really built their first kind of digital presence through the social media campaign, through writing out the blogs on their behalf and things of that nature. I got recruited to run the new media marketing department at Cornerstone. You may know Cornerstone. They're one of the kind of leading marketing agencies. They're the publisher for the Vader magazine. And I've been really at the forefront of progressive marketing for a number of years. I ended up taking on a role there as digital marketing manager, and I got really lucky. I mean, I walked into a situation where my clients were Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube, and Pharrell, and Charles Barkley, and all these amazing artists that I had admired for so long. I was now really working directly with these folks, and, you know, I worked directly with Lavender Cry Later and Snoop Dogg on Blue Carpet Treatment, Prince on 3121, and was working with Puff on Press Play. I had built up a lot of goodwill and he was looking for someone to kind of come in a bad boy and take on the lead role on the digital side. And so that opportunity was presented to me. Of course, having grown up in Philly and listening to Biggie my whole life, was kind of a, you know, dream come true. And to have gone from, you know, 3 years earlier with no experience and nothing to then saying, well, now I'm running one of the biggest, you know, new media departments on the planet was a great accomplishment for me at the time.
That is fantastic, and it kind of mirrors the opportunities that are available in the new digital world. As you said, you went in 3 years to a prime position with a major corporation. And one of the things that we've been saying in the Urban Tech Fair is that from a business perspective, where the old school paradigm was that you had to be in business for 3 years before you made a profit, now companies are being bought and sold in 1 and 2 years. So your life really kind of reflects the industry as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, there's so many recent examples, but companies like Instagram, you know, it was less than 2 years old. GroupMe was bought by Skype. It was only a year old when it was purchased. You're seeing the business cycles definitely accelerate quite a bit, obviously with technology being the driver of that. But yeah, I mean, things happen really fast, you know. You're out here in Silicon Valley. You go to a hackathon one weekend, they build a company in 3 days, next thing you know, it's sold. You know, it definitely happens much faster, I think, than any other time, and as far as I can, as far as, you know, capitalist history.
Well, you know, one of the things that your expertise that I really wanted you to talk about today was the whole gamification concept. A lot of our listeners are not familiar with that term, gamification, or the fact that video games have taken a whole new aspect in terms of e-commerce, business training, political programs, even human resources are using games to determine whether or not they want to hire you. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about gamification?
Yeah, you know, I think gamification has kind of entered our lexicon over the last couple years. It's certainly a broad term. But I think what you're starting to see is that things that traditionally not consider using game dynamics, say, for example, a healthcare company, find these non-traditional companies using games and the strategy and the kind of psychology behind games to kind of leverage other aspects or aspects of their businesses. So, for example, with a healthcare company, they can build a game to incentivize you to exercise so that you have a lower chance of actually having to, you know, use your insurance. And it's just a way basically to incentivize action. You know, we see this whole change happening with social games and Zynga and Farm Builds of the world, and that kind of creating a whole new class of gamers with, you know, women being kind of the majority of game players on social. That's something that never really happened before as far as the console experience. But I think the future, you're going to see more and more. I mean, everything from, you know, rewards points programs to loyalty programs. You know, you have these things like Groupon that are kind of creating incentivized action. Gamification is just one more way to do that. But the great thing about gamification is that it gives you a structure to create a long-term relationship with a customer, potentially. Unlike, you know, a film or a TV property, for that matter, a game is something that, you know, never may or may not ever end. So, you know, I spent, I don't know how many hours playing Warcraft, but it never ends. So it's like, you know, you could lock someone in for 6 months of their time on one game. And so it's a really powerful medium. And I think the folks that do it well are really tapping into psychology at the end of the day and how to really, like, manipulate people's – maybe manipulate is not the right word, but how to leverage psychology to achieve a goal. And that goal could be, you know, monetary or some kind of other action.
Now, for those that are listening that might be interested in getting into the gaming industry, what would you recommend some of the basic studies or courses or skill sets that they might need?
Yeah, you know, I think what I've learned from, you know, being an entrepreneur, being in Silicon Valley, is that, you know, you just got to jump into it, you know. If I was trying to get into the industry, you know, I would probably try to get an internship with a gaming company. And try to start to actually work on real games. Or a lot of folks will develop their own games these days, and some of the most popular games were done by single developers. There's a lot of online tools that can kind of walk you through the coding process and things of that nature. And so my recommendation would be to just get into it, you know, either find a way to develop a game yourself and start to get some actual experience under your belt, or if you have an opportunity to find a gaming company that will allow you to learn while you're working. I mean, school, of course, has a lot of value. I mean, I spent a lot of money going to an Ivy League university, but I think more and more you'll find that a lot of the skills, especially the technical skills, you can learn on your own. And in the Silicon Valley environment, you know, your pedigree is not nearly as valuable as what you can actually do, you know. And so, you know, if I were a young person trying to get in, I would definitely just try to get as much experience as possible, for sure.
Well, I know that Jackie's waiting to get in here. She's one of your homegirls from Philly. And one of the points that she brought up when she spoke with your state representative was that he was looking at technology as a way for to address recidivism in our community. Those ex-felons that are coming out could learn some basic skills, whether they be graphics, coding, or writing, and use them in the tech industry or leverage tech to create a career for them because, as you just said, in technology, they're not so much concerned about your pedigree as whether or not you can do the job. So the fact that you may have a criminal record will not prevent you from getting hired at most tech firms.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's actually a really amazing point. And to think about how much time people have on their hands when they're serving a prison sentence, I mean, you could build all kinds of crazy internet platforms, you know, you've got plenty of time, right? So I think as a way to rehabilitate folks, I think that's genius, you know, and certainly the kind of lifestyle that having a high-tech job would afford folks would probably be a lot better than comparable jobs that they could have. And so, yeah, I think that's actually an amazing thought, you know.
Jackie, you have a question for my brother?
Yes. I work with a lot of people in the entertainment industry, and a lot of, you know, people are interested, a lot of independent artists. It probably, you know, maybe if you could share how they can, not just how they can leverage technology, but how can they engage it, even though, you know, a lot of people feel, I'm not technical. I'm not this tech geek, but how should they engage it and leverage it in order to, build a following and a presence and get the numbers that they need to be picked up?
That's a good question. You know, it's never been more, there's never been more tools available to independent artists to be able to leverage themselves. There's never been more of a democratic system for how these artists are kind of going through these different layers of the industry. You know, if you're Justin Bieber, you know, you sing on YouTube, you get a million people to watch you, and then Usher shows up and gives you a record deal, right? That never was, that, there was no way that could happen before. You know, in the day of you know, Beastie Boy, you know, obviously shout out to MCA, that came into my mind. But back in the day, you know, you have to stand outside a Def Jam and try to throw your demo tape at somebody and hope that they would, like, you know, take a listen to it. Whereas today, you can walk in the door and create your online following and walk in the door and say, hey, you know what, I have 50,000 people who will drop on a dime and buy my album. You know, that's a very powerful thing to walk into a record label with, especially in today's age where they're very risk-averse. And so I would say, you know, there are platforms like Bandpage. We have a platform at my current company, Fighter Interactive, that allows for independent artists to build their own music applications for iPhone and for Android. Having a presence in these places is what will differentiate you from, say, a comparable artist that doesn't have the same technical abilities or the same ambition. I think, you know, having a presence, obviously Facebook and Twitter are the drivers today for all kinds of social engagement. But there, you know, there's certainly a number of other platforms like Tumblr that is a great blogging platform, and WordPress, as well as platforms like Reverb Nation that allow for artists and bands to really kind of build a following, but also analyze that following.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the great thing about the internet is if I'm Coca-Cola and I do a partnership with Snoop Dogg, well, I can specifically target the Snoop Dogg bands that are specifically in the demographic for whatever product it is. And as a band, as you're building your fan base, you know, understanding who those people are is super important, so that you can then sell into a brand. You know, and never before in the history of the planet have you been able to say, oh, well, I have, you know, 50,000 fans ages 15 to 20 who like, you know, who like the color red. You know, as an artist, you can sell that information and go, hey, Dr. Pepper, you should sell your product against my fan base. Another product actually that we have is called Market Page. Our partners developed that we're kind of selling into music industry, but it basically allows for artists to sell merchandise directly to their fan base through their Facebook page. As well as brands can sell directly against a Facebook page. So we launched this product with Snoop Dogg at Southwest, and immediately he has a new pair of Snoop Dogg slippers are on sale on his Facebook page through our product, you know. And it's like things like that that allow you to have a more direct relationship with your consumer. It's what I would be doing if I was thinking about how to build my career as an independent artist. I think, you know, also in this environment, touring has never been more important. You know, the 99-cent iTunes paradigm has kind of limited what you can make potentially on recorded music. And the value of the tour relative to your other revenue is much higher, I think, than it's ever been before.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was an independent artist today, I would be looking at people like Blitz the Ambassador or MGK or The Roots and thinking about, okay, how do I do something that's a crazy live show that somebody will have to pay for, you know, but they can't take off the internet, and that's compelling enough that people will want to see that on a regular basis. I think that at the end of the day, is the biggest asset of any artist.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you're touching on another private button of mine in terms of web series and the advent of a user-generated video as a way of marketing and developing a fan base. Would you advise, say, someone that's trying to get into the industry, whether they be from an artist perspective, be it spoken word or musical, or whether it be from a developer's perspective, to use platforms such as YouTube and live stream to promote these services?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, you have things like Ustream, and Vidi and kind of this whole emerging class of new viral video platforms, Social Cam, Mobily, and you know, it's interesting to see how celebrities are already really engaging these things, Tout being another one. We've seen, you know, Shaq using Tout to make his announcement that he was retiring from the NBA last year, and you've seen a number of celebrity investors sell on some of these viral video platforms. I mean, I've had some pretty good experiences using Ustream. They were kind of the first ones, I think. Ustream and kind of Kite were like the first ones to kind of really socialize video. But we're still at the very beginning of that entire age. I mean, if you think about YouTube is only, you know, four or five years old itself, right? And now YouTube puts a household name, but what YouTube is actually doing to our society is changing the way we view ourselves and how we view content creators. I think there's a whole industry emerging kind of in the digital, you spoke to this earlier as far as creating digital content, web series, webisodes, but that entire ecosystem that didn't exist 3 years ago, you know, before you had to have the broadcast TV network, you know, pay you $100,000 or whatever before you could even think about producing something. Now you have a digital camera, you've got your YouTube channel, and you could reach an audience of 1 million people, you know, directly. I think there's also a lot of new kind of next generation video technologies that are coming out that will enable sharing to happen a lot faster. And things like the BitTorrent is working on, particularly, that are really efficient at transferring data based on kind of viral video and people all kind of watching the same live video stream. So there's a company called YouNow that I really like, and they're basically gamifying viral video. In this platform, you know, kind of the crowd decides who should be broadcasting at any given moment. And the more popular broadcasters get more points, and therefore they're incentivized to broadcast more often. And a really interesting platform, I think, you know, we'll start to see make some noise this year as well. But I would definitely advise any independent artist, and I do this for my clients. I mean, you have the ability, most people have a smartphone, or you can buy a $100 flip camera or whatever, and there's no better way to tell your story to your fans, you know, than to allow them to see inside your world for a little bit. I mean, MTV Cribs is kind of the extreme example, but yeah, people want to feel that kind of intimacy with an artist, especially in this day and age.
Okay. Well, this has been excellent advice, excellent information, you know, a great eye-opener, and hopefully our artists and people will, you know, take advantage. I mean, I think everyone is engaging social media and all of these platforms. I think where most of them are lost at is actually having a plan.
Yeah, sure.
And, yeah, knowing how to actually strategize, you know, just because you know, this concept, and people still put it out there. Some people still believe if you build it, they will come. And you know, no, you have to ask them to come. You have to compel them to come. You have to give them a reason.
I think it's never been more noise as well, right? Like, there's so many. You get, you know, overwhelmed with email. I hear people all the time saying, oh, my God, I can't deal with email. It's too much. I'm like, wow, really? Like, but I mean, there's so much stimulation at any given time. And most people today will sit down at their house, watch TV with their laptop and iPad, you know, and their cell phone all at the same time. And you're getting, you know, hit from all these different kind of points, and you still only have two eyes and ears, right? And so it's harder and harder to kind of cut through that noise, if you will. But I think the opportunity for the independent artist is that you actually can come to the table, and you don't have to wait for somebody to give you an opportunity to present who you are to the world, you know?
Yes, that's for sure. Okay, now what we're going to do, we're going to bring on Cynthia. I think we're going to, just take a moment. We're going to just play a song, and then we're going to bring Cynthia on, and you can meet Cynthia, and then we can expand our conversation.
Cool.
Digital drummer Jim Newsom with Urban Tech Talk on the radio. Our special guests today are Kwasi Asari, and we also have Cynthia Renee Frazier. She is CEO of Tech Divas Uncorked. Hi, Cynthia.
Hello there.
Hello, gentlemen. You're going to say hello?
How you doing, Cynthia?
Hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. So glad to speak to the beautiful, dynamic, intelligent diva of technology.
Oh, my gosh. I tell you. Well, thank you. Flattery will get you everywhere, so I'm just letting you know the check is already in the mail.
This is a great opportunity for you, Cynthia, because you have that upcoming event, Girls on Geek, which you're putting together. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it? Because the gentleman that we have online right now, Brother Causey, that's his expertise. He might be able to, I'm sure he'd be interested in speaking on that.
Absolutely, and it's really a pleasure to meet you, Causey. And before I talk about Girls Got Geek, I just have to say that it warmed my heart to hear a young man like yourself refer to music as an album. So I did send you a message on Facebook with that message as well. I thought I was the only one that was still running around talking about albums, so I don't feel like I have to keep pinching myself now. So how are you doing?
Oh, I'm great. You know, it's always nice to be home in San Francisco. It seems like these days you live out of suitcases more time than not, so it's always nice to be here, kind of in the home of Silicon Valley, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, cool. So, yeah, I'm very excited about technology, and I'm excited to be a part of the Urban Tech Fair and to be connected to Jacqueline. She is just an awesome person doing really exciting things out there in the marketplace, and we're all coming together to find ways to create synergy and grow and kind of, you know, get this tech movement happening in our respective communities. And I'm down south of San Francisco, down in San Bernardino County, which is about 70 miles east of Los Angeles. And I want to get my community on board with technology. And I did have a question on something that you were talking about earlier. Is it okay, Jackie, if I just ask my question first?
Sure. Go ahead. Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, when you were talking a little bit earlier and I thought about some of the pundits out there, they're obviously not insiders, who are saying that we're headed for another tech bubble because some of the valuations are not tied to revenue or profit models, and you mentioned Instagram and companies like that. So what do you see as the future of this whole tech drive, and do you see a tech bubble coming?
Well, I'll look into my crystal ball here and see what the future may hold. I mean, the difference to me between the last cycle and this cycle, sure, you're seeing super high valuations, and maybe some of them may be more robust than some people would feel comfortable with. But I think the main difference is that we now live in a broadband world, and you have countries all over the world, you know, including Africa and all over Asia, that are becoming, you know, internet enabled very quickly, and therefore the growth rates that we're seeing could be much more sustainable, whereas 10 years ago people were still using very slow internet connections, and the barriers to entry to get online were so high. I think, we'll see what happens after Facebook's IPO later on this year. I think if they continue to deliver and the street continues to support Facebook at a $100 billion plus valuation, then I think it's a very good sign that the industry is healthy and will continue to grow and see even higher heights. If Facebook doesn't really meet its revenue expectations and into next year isn't continuing to grow at the rate that it's growing or has been, then I think you'll start to see signs of a correction maybe down the line. Facebook is kind of like the barometer, I would say, for the health of kind of the tech scene. And it's become the platform, right? Just like the iPhone has for the app developer, Facebook supports the entire, game developer industry at this point and so many other kind of subcultures in the digital world. So Facebook's health, I think, will certainly be a big determining factor and if we do see a correction in the marketplace. But if I were a betting man, I would say, you know, the chances of us hitting another, you know, recession like we did the last time, and a correction, if you will, are much lower, again, because of the global nature of the digital economy that we live in today.
Well, let me chime in here, because you are a betting man with your new startup, Fighter.
That's true, yes.
I'd like to know what direction I are as the founder and CEO. I know I read your website, and it's basically a brand development, which you have, you know, obviously spoke on your expertise and background in that area. But relative to the direction of the company, is Fighter Inc. going to be more on the game side, the app side, the marketing side?
Yeah, so, I mean, we have really two core businesses at this point, and kind of a third on the horizon, I would say. Primarily, you know, we service media companies' needs as far as Facebook applications and mobile applications. You know, we have a team of developers here in San Francisco and another team that we work with out of England. And our clients are people like Bad Boy Entertainment and Sony and Warner and all these guys. We're trying to help hold their hand through this mobile application, you know, process. The other thing that we do is advisory for technology companies. Say you're a company from Finland, or you're a company from not from Silicon Valley or whatever, and you want to deal with Puffy or you want to work with a celebrity, then we can enable you to do that. And we have a number of clients right now, technology platforms like Kiosk and TinyPay that we're leveraging with artists like Snoop Dogg and Puffy and others. I guess where I'm making my bets is certainly in the application game, and specifically for kind of a long tail of devices, not just iOS, but Android and Microsoft and kind of some of the other emerging technology platforms. And then at the same time, discovering new technology all over the world and trying to help those companies reach celebrities and media companies. The third thing that I would say I'm betting on is as far as our company is concerned, is financing other startups. You know, we're working with a number of VC groups, both domestically and overseas, and thinking about ways to optimize investing in media technology companies. And with that, bringing celebrities to the table to invest in startups. And I think it's something that's happening a lot more. You're seeing that investments from people like Nas and Rap Lyrics. You had Puffy invested in Tiny Chat. Ashton Kutcher has invested in numerous startups, and Guy Ritchie, Madonna's manager. You've seen Troy Carter, Lady Gaga's manager, very active in investing. And so I see that as a big strength and something that we're going to be pursuing as well. It's not just our startup, but helping other startups find financing and specifically helping celebrities invest in startups that make sense for them to be a part of.
Mm, sounds great.
I think that kind of seems to be Cynthia's event.
Excuse me, Jim, right before we move on, I just wanted, you had said, Kwazi, about artists, that you had a page or something for artists at Fighter Interactive.
Yeah, so we have a mobile application platform where basically people can create mobile applications.
And where do they go to check that out?
I guess the best thing to do would be, you could certainly check out our website and email us at hq@wearefighter.com or email myself at kwasi@wearefighter.com.
Okay, and put it in the chat room.
Yeah, I'm also, I'm always accessible via Facebook. That's always facebook.com/kwasi is always a good way to get a hold of me. But yeah, I mean, for independent artists that are looking for a way to get onto iOS, to get onto Android and some of these other platforms, we can definitely do that in a very cost-effective manner for these folks and enable these artists also to content manage their own mobile applications. You know, we're building platforms, so you don't even necessarily need to talk to us to use the platform, and you don't have to go to us to update your content. It's something that you can do from your own laptop and in real time as things are occurring in these artists' lives, you know. That's the future, being able to not just have your own website, but then to say, wow, well, I can stream live to my audience on a mobile application. That's kind of the future that we see as far as artists and music and media, for sure.
Okay. Okay. Now, Cynthia, first, you know, I know you've been on before, but, you know, we're always engaging new audiences, and I think today, because we probably have a lot of entertainers listening to this right now, you know, give us a little background about who you are and tell us about Girls Got Geek.
Okay, sure. So I am an, you know, all things tech kind of girl, but primarily I have an educational background. I have a master's degree in instructional technology and really set out a few years ago to be a leader in teaching teachers how to incorporate technology into their lesson plans. And that moved a little bit slow for me. And so, you know, as true entrepreneurs like we are and risk takers and so forth, I haven't ditched that, but I just kind of put that on the shelf. And actually, I'm seeing now that education is beginning to catch up, so there might be more opportunities available in that. But in the meantime, I've kind of gone out as a consultant and looked at ways to start my own programs in the marketplace, and that's pretty much what I do. So, yeah, and then Girls Got Geek. When I was introduced to crowdfunding and I was looking at a crowdfunding project on Kickstarter and I saw code HERO fund, I got very, very excited because it is a gaming app that teaches basically gaming app, you know, how to make a game, how to develop a game. And right away, I went into community mode and started thinking about how can I utilize this particular mobile app to get girls involved in developing. So, you know, it's no surprise that girls and women are way behind in terms of their entry into the tech marketplace, and I think that something like this would be an awesome opportunity to rally some of the young women in my community and get them excited about what's going on behind the scenes rather than just consuming the tools. So that's Girls Got Geek. Very excited.
So if I understand you correctly, Cynthia, you're putting together a tech challenge in San Bernardino. I'm not sure the dates. When are the dates again?
So I haven't set the date because it's really the crowdfunding campaign that has to take place first, and I have submitted my project to Kickstarter, and that has to be approved. So if you're familiar with Kickstarter, they by hand or by human eyeballs approve every project that loads on their website. And because of that, it could take anywhere from 3 days, I'm hearing some people say 2 weeks, before they actually approve your project. And then once that happens, you make the project live and you set your timing, and then you go about marketing your project to get it funded. So once the project funds, then I'll be able to set a date. I'm really looking at late summer or early fall.
Okay, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, so let me switch reels and let's talk about your other community organization, Divas Uncorked. I'm sure Brother Kwazi would love to come to one of your events and uncork a bottle of wine with you.
Yes, well, that is also one of my properties. So basically, Kwazi, what I have done is I've taken a service business that started out as a marketing consultant and really moved it into a product business. And along the way, I've developed several properties. Tech Divas Uncorked is a property that I developed back in 2007, 2008, which is basically a meetup. I didn't know it then, but that's pretty much what we call it now, is a gathering of women business owners to learn about technology. And to do that, I incorporated the Uncorked piece, which is I call call it a taste and test, so that we can have a little wine tasting while we are testing technology. And so I had women business owners coming to me who were purchasing a lot of equipment. A lot of them had laptops, and they didn't know how to connect to a hotspot, for example. So when we meet up, we literally just play around with the technology, whatever the individual needs to do in terms of their own learning and productivity. That's kind of, you know, what the agenda is for that particular meetup. And I've done meetups on smartphones and how to use your smartphone. I've done meetups on your laptop, equipment. I do a lot of cameras and projectors because I have worked with speakers and authors who are running their own events, and they need to understand and learn about equipment. You mentioned the flip cam, which actually is off the market now. They're not producing that anymore, but there are a lot of other simple-to-use digital cameras for business owners. So just, you know, adding some fun to technology, because some people find it very cumbersome and difficult.
Well, you know, that's what the Urban Tech Fair is all about, and essentially I tell people all the time that we're just showcasing existing organizations such as Divas Uncork, which are doing good work in the community and showing people different resources that they can go to for help and expertise in developing their own ideas. That's why I am so excited about Quasi being a part of the Urban Tech Fair in Philly and willing to come on as a virtual advisor and supporter in our different events. I mean, the knowledge base that's available out there, there's a lot of fantastic people doing amazing things that we never hear about.
That is
absolutely
true.
Oh,
I'm
so
excited,
so
too.
True.
Yes, I'm from Philly.
And
I'm quiet.
Like them.
So I guess
I'm definitely excited about working and with you, Jim, as well. Philly, you know, is my hometown, so anything to support technology and the advancement of the local economy there, I'm definitely supportive.
Great. Well, we're going to be meeting soon. Matter of fact, Jim, Eileen Gadsden, the president of the Philadelphia chapter of the BDPA, she contacted me today, and her and I meet next Monday for breakfast at Starbucks. And then I'm getting our second meeting with State Representative W. Curtis Thomas. He does the 181st District, which is the east side of Girard Avenue.
Sure.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of, you know, development going on there. And, you know, he's a brilliant man, and tech is his thing. So when I came to him, he gave us valuable feedback. He told us everything that we needed to do. So, you know, we're excited. And, you know, there are just a lot of good things, you know, going on. So, I really look to speak with you, too. And one thing I've been stating that I'm looking for a mentor, so I may even ask you to mentor me. I'm looking for a mentor in marketing.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of pressure on there. I'm definitely open to the possibility. How about that?
Yes, that sounds great.
Well, one of the things that we hope to demonstrate our showcase during the Urban Tech Fair is a people of color involved in technology. So often when we think of the tech, we think, oh, that's the white man's thing or that's their thing, but we don't really see ourselves in the position of becoming the next Bill Gates, the next Zuckerberg. And we have the talent, we have great ideas, and that's essentially what the new age economy is about, is ideas. And as Quasi was saying earlier, the question becomes, how do you take them ideas or the process of taking them ideas and moving them forward in a logical business process to make them reality?
Definitely. So We also, Alita is on the line, Lee Sanders from out in D.C.
Oh, hello, everybody.
Hey,
hi. Hello. Hi. I'm so upset that I missed the beginning half of this talk show. I mean, of the radio show. I'm so disappointed. I wanted to hear from both of you guys because I've been following you guys. And my name is Lee Sanders. I'm the social media chair or city leader for the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. And I cannot wait to just listen to the show and hear what you guys were talking about. So I'm just listening right now and so excited that I'm on now.
So, did I apologize. I stepped off for a little bit to answer some calls that were coming in on the other line. But where are we at with Girls Got Geek? Cynthia, did you tell us specifically what we needed to do to support it?
Yeah, so once I get approval to make the campaign live, you will definitely hear from me on Facebook because I will ask for support in terms of getting the word out, and I've been working behind the scenes on a marketing piece that I can use, just to drive the traffic. So with crowdfunding, you know, a lot of people are under the impression that money just kind of falls out of the sky with that. You put up your project and all of a sudden it's funded. But it's really driving traffic and engaging people and getting them excited about what you're doing that contributes to a successful campaign. So I appreciate all the support I can get on Facebook especially, and any other suggestions that you might make for me to get the word out and get people over there to that page.
Yeah.
Well, if I can make a suggestion right now, since we have a venture capitalist on the line with us, that you give your email address out to those people that want to get involved, that are interested in Divas Ad Tech, can contact you directly.
Well, thank you. So my email address is techdivasuncorked@gmail.com. And, of course, Facebook is a really great place to catch me because I think I'm a 24/7 Facebook kind of gal. So
I hear you.
I'm always there. So,
are you on Twitter, too?
I am on Twitter under Tech Divas Global.
Okay.
So for all the listeners out there that want to see more women involved in tech or want to expand opportunities for girls in technology, I ask that you send Cynthia $10. I think she might appreciate that.
Absolutely.
That's
yes,
good.
Indeedy. $10 counts. And that's the exciting thing about crowdfunding is that, you know, you're not making a huge ask, you're just making a lot of small asks. And, definitely every dollar does count. So I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, if anyone has any questions or anything that I can do to answer about crowdfunding, I'd love to support other projects as well.
Great. Thank you.
Well, yeah, let's not overlook the opportunity of the knowledge base that Brother Quasi has. Would you have any advice for young entrepreneurs such as, and yes, Cynthia, you are young, that are looking to develop or get funding? Are there other alternatives than just crowdfunding, Kickstarter, Rocket? Are there other ways that they can go?
That's an interesting question. We this is a good transition. We work with Startup America right now on a number of initiatives, including a series of events at the Democratic National Convention and the Republican National Convention. Essentially, for the first time, we'll be bringing entrepreneurs and innovators to the two conventions to essentially meet with government officials and celebrities who will all be attending these conventions. And we're working on this project with Startup America. They're an amazing platform for resource aggregation. And I think they're only a year old, but I think you'll start to see Startup America taking a major role in a lot of startups. I think they have about 3,000 startups already on their platform. And, you know, they try to support these startups with providing them access to funding, providing them access to legal help and accounting and things of that nature that every startup needs. So definitely Startup America would be an option as far as a potential funding source. I think the other thing that I'm seeing a lot now is regional governments, be it in Las Vegas or New York to some extent, in New Orleans, you're starting to see these cities, the states getting together and saying, hey, we want to recruit technology companies. We want you to move your company to our hometown and help us create a little bit of that Silicon Valley magic in our hometown. And so, as an entrepreneur, definitely, I think, looking at ways to leverage those kinds of resources, and specifically in New York City, I know a program that's doing that back in Deloitte to support media technology companies there. I know some efforts in New Orleans that are being driven by the state and the city, as well as Las Vegas with Tony Hsieh and his downtown Las Vegas project. You're seeing a lot of these kind of things becoming very aggressive in recruiting technology companies. You're also seeing foreign governments, like the government of Singapore, giving investments to startups to have them open offices in Singapore. In Europe, it's kind of become in practice that governments have been investors in local startups for a long time. So you're starting to see those efforts step up. And I think, if I was out there looking for funding today, I would definitely consider, those federal and kind of state opportunities as well as the traditional financing routes.
Can I ask you a question, Mr. Arzair or Kwazi? This is Lee Sanders, the person with Urban Tech DC. What do you feel about brokers as far as of a startup company, especially entertainment, like if a production company wants to, they're in entertainment, but they're moving into more like mobile apps and apps. How do you feel about a broker type of investor?
When you say a broker, what do you mean? Do you mean a... Like a traditional investment bank, or?
Well, it's not a bank. It's kind of like, I don't know if you have ever heard of Caribbean Convergence, but basically they are like the middle person that brings the startup company or the new company or maybe established company to meet like multi-million dollar deals, like usually 30 million plus, and then they ask you to give certain percentage of that, like maybe like if it's $51 million, then you have to give them $56,000. Like they broker the deal between the company that's seeking funding for like their company, film company or production company, with the funder source or funding sources.
Yeah, I'm familiar. I think those things can certainly be effective. I would be cautious though of a lot of upfront fees. If it's performance based, then I think it's a no brainer. Then you, of course, if somebody will help you raise money, and they're just going to take a commission, then that's amazing. Assuming they're a credible individual. If they're asking for heavy retainers, like some folks will say, hey, well, I'll go out and raise you $1 million, but I need $10,000 a month to let do it.
Not just for the one time deal, like the one time fee of $4,000 and then one time deal. I wonder if it was kind of like shady or funny, or was it, that's how typical brokers
are? I don't know enough about that company to really say, or their background. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of different ways people are finding financing these days. And as far as a specific broker, I couldn't say unless you look at their track record. It's like if they can show, hey, well, there's five companies that we've worked with and two of them got funding, then, hey, it's like, wow, you guys can move the needle. I would definitely do diligence on whoever company is bringing you that opportunity. And what do you really get for that $4,000 investment, How many meetings are they going to set up for you? How in-depth are they going to help you with your deal documents, Yeah, I would say just be credible of what that package looks like, and certainly the track record of the company,
Okay, the track record. Okay. And do you know about anything, like, also with the regional, you said, like, most regional governments, what do you feel about in L.A. or how, do you think those type of entities in L.A. are doing what you said other cities are doing, regional governments?
Yeah, you know, there's been efforts to create Silicon Beach. I think that's a term you start to hear. I've been hearing a lot lately as far as Los Angeles creating its own tech community. And I know that there's been efforts in the past to kind of bring incubators and stuff like that to the Los Angeles area. I don't know of any specific initiative at this time from the city. But, you know, it might be that I'm just not aware. Know specifically that, you know, the city of New York has a media technology incubator. Las Vegas is actually, you know, supporting Tony Hsieh and his efforts to move technology companies there. The folks in New Orleans are starting to look. I do know of those specific entities.
In D.C.?
But I don't know of any in D.C.
Okay.
But, you know, D.C. has a really strong tech community. You know, if you look at companies like ClearSpring and some others, you know, the entire, you know, that kind of military.
Virginia area,
label, yeah, I mean, it's very, very full for technology companies right now. I don't know that there's any specific government incentive to move technology companies to D.C. at this point. But, yeah, I would definitely research that if you were looking into kind of getting Los Angeles to maybe position itself the same way. It would make sense, you know, especially because you're seeing.
Yeah, thank you so much.
No, yeah, it would make sense if I was in L.A. to set something up like that up, because otherwise you're going to lose a lot of these companies to these other areas that are being more aggressive, you know.
Wow.
Well,
thank you.
Let me step in here, and I'm sure that Quasi would agree that what we need as a community is to become aware of the process. When we start talking about venture capital and investment, there are different levels and different areas you have to be pre-prepared for. Quincy Jones once said to me that an opportunity can be the worst thing that ever happened to you if you're not prepared. And as we know, in the tech world, there's different levels. You have your grubstake level of funding, then you have your angel level of funding, then you have your VC level of funding, and then you have your IPO. Quasi, you wanted to kind of inform our listeners on the different levels and monetary amounts relative to those stages?
I'm sorry, what was the last part of the question, Jim?
Like, let's say that if you were at the grubstake level in terms of your development as a startup, I'm saying that that's roughly about $5,000 to $40,000, and then an angel financer would look at more like $50,000 to $100,000, and a venture capitalist would look at a higher number. You want to touch on that? That a little bit about the different stages of funding and what's needed before you approach an investor or a potential VC?
Yeah, that's actually really, really a good question. I think you're seeing things kind of shift a little bit because of a lot of the wealth that's been created in early internet booms. Companies are kind of getting funding much earlier, a lot of cases, than I think they had ever been able to before. Although, you know, in the last internet boom, you could raise money just on having a pitch deck, you know, and a good idea. In this environment, you know, the bar is much higher. You know, you have to have a full product that probably has customers and is already out there. That's kind of the entry-level position, I think, for most VCs or even for most angel investors. I think, you know, you're starting to see this emerging class of super angels kind of coming out that sit between angels and traditional VCs, guys like Ron Conway and folks that are they may invest $1 million like a traditional VC would, but they'll do it at terms that aren't necessarily as restrictive as a traditional VC. But, yeah, I think your traditional angel investor could, you know, invest anywhere from $5,000 to $1 million. They have to certainly be accredited in this environment, meaning that I think their net worth has to be over, I want to say, $2 million or something like that. Now you're starting to see that change with the crowdsourcing, you know, laws kind of coming into effect. But at this point, you still need to be an accredited investor to make an angel investment. And I think they tend to be, you know, kind of generally under $1 million. I think if you're going, you're raising money above that, you probably want to look at some early stage VC companies. And as far as the companies itself, like I said before, having a product in the marketplace that's actually generating customers or revenue, it's kind of where you want to start to then try to raise money. It's very difficult, even with the prototype. Not to say that it hasn't been done, but I think it's much harder in this environment to raise money with actually having consumers paying money for a product.
It's harder for – you're trying to say that a product that – like, let's say I have a mobile app that's for kids that's doing – I should have it already not in prototype mode, but already kind of generating money already on the Droid and the iOS. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think your best chance of actually closing an angel investment or even, you know, I mean, I'm talking about not just necessarily your friends and family. I mean, a traditional Silicon Valley angel or even an early stage venture capital company. In this environment, having a live product that's actually generating revenue or aggregating customers is what is going to excite a venture capitalist. You know, if you have a great idea, you know, and you have a decent prototype and they see the vision, sure, there's deals that are closed in that framework. But the chances of you getting the VC money that you're looking for, or even angel money from, a traditional angel investor, the chances are much higher if you actually are already in the marketplace, you've already gone through the App Store, and if you have 100,000 people using your product, then, of course, people will throw money at you, you know? Even that, like, there's a company I'm working with right now, they have 450,000 users, they've only been live for, like, 2 months, and even them, it's like, well, how do we know that you're the one that's going to continue to grow and be the next Instagram. So the barriers of entry are still relatively high, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The farther along as far as generating revenue you can get with your company, the higher likelihood of you actually closing.
But isn't it catch-22 for people? Because, like, you have to have some time, like, how would one get to the point where they can generate, I mean, have the capital to even create the app, to create the ability to have the funding to create the product,
yeah,
you know, like for going from prototype to a product.
I mean,
yeah,
it's definitely not easy.
Yeah.
But I mean,
it's about money. They're like going to look at you. Like, if you want to see a real good example, watch the shark. Investors right there. But they tell people that, you know, they say, okay, we did this and all. They say, well, where are your billables? You know, because people can say this is a good idea and people should buy it, but that doesn't mean people are going to buy it, or even more importantly, that you know how to get people to buy it. So, you know, when they just most of the time want to invest, don't want to do the work of building a company because they've already done, built their company.
No, I hear what you're saying. I was wondering, like, more so like the money to even, like, you know, from the prototype or just the idea, getting from there to, like, before you get to the VC and the angel investor, where would one even get the startup money to, not startup money, but the pre-startup money before you even get on the show for Shark Tank, you know, that's what I'm talking about. Like, that's doing all the work. But sometimes people need that.
You're right. It's a real challenge, you know, because say you have a startup idea, you're not an engineer, you have to hire one. Who's going to pay that engineer, right? It's like,
exactly.
Well, most engineers,
most
engineers in this environment have no reason to not work for free, you know, or to work on spec, meaning, you know, for the hope of getting paid later on in the project. You know, in this environment, engineers can charge a real premium for their services. And so it's harder and harder to get someone to build the prototype that you need to actually go and raise the money, you know. It's a real challenge, you know. It's definitely not an easy thing to do. I mean, I would say, unfortunately, you know, friends and family play a large part in that very early stage. You know, it sucks to say that, but
I hear you.
There's not really a lot of ways without an actual product. I mean, if you have a business plan and you have, you know, the right team, then, you know, take your shot. You know, you might be able to find the right fit. I do believe
that too.
Yeah, I mean, you never know. I mean, maybe that's enough to get your initial investment done so you can then go build the product, you know. But I think, you know, in this environment, engineers definitely are at a premium, and so they can command, you know, payment, you know. There's no reason why they should say, oh, well, sure, I'll work on this project for a month for free and hope to get paid. Like, no, it's like, you know, give me 20 grand and I'll do it, you know.
Exactly. But thank
now,
you. I understand what you're saying, though. I hear what you're saying about that part, because I do get that part. That's the catch-22 part of the whole process, but that's what it is, the blood work and sweat and tears I think you're talking about, Jackie, is that all that work that one has to put into it to even get to the part where you have to get to the investor's part. So,
sometimes it's just, you know, about making a dollar out of 15 cents, you know. you may kind of like go hustle, you know, to raise the initial capital.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, a little different type of...
Because one of the advantages of participating in tech challenges and hackathons and dojos is that you begin to learn the process of team building. As Kwasi said, the first thing you got to do is be able to assemble a team that is confident to reach your goals. And that is usually laid out through the development process, via a business plan or a white paper or a marketing strategy, to get everybody on the same page to begin with. And you're going to need certain people on your team. It's not really a one-man show. You need to have someone that can do code, someone that can do graphics, someone that is experienced in marketing, because this is what investors and the VC people are going to look at. The track record of your team, if you do not have it completed, viable product, but if you have a super team on board, it will give you the leaps above just coming in the door and saying, I have a great idea. Yes, friends and family are a great source for startup funding, but through the Open Tech Fair and through President Obama's Jobs Act with opening up the doors for crowdfunding, we're hoping that we can set up the microloan program under the Urban Tech Fair called Crowdfunding through the Urban Tech Fair that will give some of that seed money for people that are trying to develop new ideas and new applications.
That's great.
But you must remember that first you've got to have a team that has worked out a prototype. It's not hard to do if you can just write it out on paper. You've got to be able to have something for people to actually see, touch, and feel. I often say that everything in life begins on paper. So one of the advantages of participating in events like Cynthia Renee Frazier talking about putting on in San Bernardino, that James Hines puts on all around the country, that Kwasi has been involved in from the West Coast to the East Coast, is these different tech affairs, tech challenges, hackathons, app challenges, business plan challenges, because they're a great environment to go and meet like-minded people that have skills and abilities and to develop some of the expertise needed to take your plan or your idea to the next level.
That is so true. That is so true, because then you can kind of assemble a team that might be inspired to do it for free in the beginning and then reap the benefits later.
Yeah, one other place I would say, funding-wise, you know, AngelList, which I believe is about a year and a half old at this point, is where a lot of entrepreneurs these days are finding a concentration of a lot of angel investors that, you know, could put to work $1 million or $2 million in the right idea. And it's become very democratized because you have all these people who've kind of banded together and they're investing, co-investing together and looking at deal flow at the same time. And it's a way for you to basically pitch, you know, say 100 angel investors at once. And so I would definitely recommend that as another potential avenue to get funding for an early stage company.
Okay. Yes.
Out of time, but can I just chime in with a quick comment?
Yeah.
I wanted to say that, you know, there's all kinds of ways to start raising funds on different levels, and on the entry level, I would not discount grants by teaming up with nonprofits. I've been able to fund my company that way. I wrote a program a few years ago that I wanted to get out into the marketplace to teach teens and parents about the dangers of sexting. So I went to a nonprofit and partnered with that nonprofit to raise the funds. So I think, you know, when we say think out of the box, you really have to not think out of the line, but, you know, just really start thinking all over the place in a true brainstorming kind of way based on what resources or what relationships you have access to. So I happen to have access to some great nonprofits in my area. They were struggling. I went to them and said, look, I've got a great program and I had the funding. All I need is an MOU with you that we can come to terms with, and, you know, I'll bring you this money and then, you know, you cut me a check. So,
that's a great point. And you see a lot of brands getting more and more aggressive in partnering with startups or investing directly in startups. I think that's actually a great point.
That is. Thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, and I actually had something for you, Lita. Someone reached out to me. Is a producer. He does West Coast Black Television. And I've been on for a while, and he shops shows. But then he came to me. He's like, look, Jack, you know business. I know production and, you know, and I know that part, but you know business. What I need is this. So I had him break down the formula, what he would need. And, you know, broke it down, and he needs 30 blocks of, he's giving commercials at 500, 30 blocks. And how many of those blocks do you need? It needed for 13 weeks and like 5 to 6 major markets. And this is enough for him to get started because he prefers working with broadcast stations. You know, he's a little old school. He's still into the broadcast station, but he has those relationships. So we figured out a way that we could raise the money through selling blocks of commercials. Mm-hmm. You know, a block is 30. Nice. Yeah, and, you know, we figured out the numbers. When it comes out at the end, we're like at a million something. And then we're in 5 or 6 major markets. So put the package together and we sell blocks. So one thing I was going to do, because I know what you're doing, you're looking at distribution through another end, but like if we all come together and collaborate and get these blocks sold, what happens is now you come with, you know, your application, taking it another way, but he already has us on the broadcast stations. So there's real programming, and everybody has the programming. He wants to come up with the distribution system.
That's awesome.
So those are just, you know, again, ways outside the box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. I know. That's why I love collaborating with everybody here. It's great minds because it's a way of sharing. And I also wanted to say real quick, I went to a Angel, and something they just started in Maryland, D.C., Virginia. It was called foster.ly. It's basically a for-profit entity with a mission of supporting entrepreneurs in D.C., Maryland, Virginia. And basically they have mentors, workshops, and it was at the it was in Virginia, and it had Microsoft there, had other startup companies, all tech companies come in, had angel investors, all kinds of people there where they had classes. So I started joining or working with these groups of people that that are trying to foster that type of entrepreneur spirit in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. And so, Jackie, we definitely have to talk about that. So I'm glad you're telling me about that because they said not only in technology, but they're having it in other areas of business too. They want to support everybody that's trying to do a startup.
Okay. Nice. We have 5 minutes left, so this is what I would like to do. And we're going to go with we're going to start with you, Cynthia. Then we're going to go to you, Alita, Jim, and we're going to close out with you, Kwazi. You had 30 seconds and the whole world listening. What would you like to say? Cynthia?
First of all, I have to stop myself from laughing and smiling. 30 seconds for the whole world. You know what? Get on board. Take a risk. Just do the dang thing. You know, team up and find people that you can resonate with. And let's go. Let's make it happen.
All right.
Wow. Look out for Urban Tech Fair DC coming soon. Hopefully in November or October. And also Zoolay, the Proper Detective mobile app. And that's S as in Sam, U as in Umbrella, L as in Love, and A as in Apple. The Proper Detective, based on Nelson Mandela's principles of forgiveness. Look out for that.
Wait.
That's it. And thank you for the guest speakers for coming. You guys rock. And Jim and Jackie, as usual.
Jim?
Well, I'd like to just thank everybody for their support. And, you know, we have a lot of willing people of goodwill and expertise, such as Brother Kwazi here, Mario Armstrong, Kai Dupree. I could go on a list of experienced, knowledgeable people that are willing to give back to the community, to share of their time and knowledge. This man charges big dollars to talk his affairs and share the knowledge that he shared with us tonight for free, and I just want to take this opportunity to thank him.
Wow.
All right.
Thanks, Jim. well, thank you guys for having me. It's been a great experience. I look forward to doing this again in the future. I guess what I'll leave you all with is if you're an entrepreneur out there, and you are looking for ways to find funding, you know, resiliency is going to be your biggest asset, certainly. And, you know, you never know how many times it's going to take you to actually close that deal, but it certainly won't happen if you don't take the meeting, you know. We're actually working on this initiative right now, as mentioned before, with Startup America, called Startup Rock On. And for the first time, we're going to be bringing together founders, government officials, and celebrities at the two conventions. And so for those of you guys who feel like your voice needs to be heard as an entrepreneur, please join us in Charlotte and in Tampa, and not only just supporting other entrepreneurs, but you certainly have the opportunity to voice your concerns about the future of technology and government. Hopefully you'll be able to join us in Charlotte and Tampa.
Can we go online anywhere for that?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Can we go online for more information?
Oh, yeah, startuprockon.com is the website.
Okay.
Again, you can email me directly at kwazi@wearefighter.com or facebook.com/kwazi, and I can certainly provide any information necessary.
Okay. Well, thank you. Everyone, thank you so much. Always an excellent show, and, you know, we always feel blessed just to share good news. We inundated daily with all of this negative news that makes us seem, you know, like we're just these really negative people. And I've experienced it from people who really just think of black folks as, you know, overall picture negative. But it's just so good to just every day, you know, people I know, just everyday people prove the lie. And it's good to be able to share the truth. And just, I'm just excited. I look forward to working with everyone further. And this is Master Grio Radio, and we speak for everyone. Peace and love. Alrighty, good night.